Hello, pals. It is me, Duncan Trussell, and you are listening to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. And I am particularly excited about this episode because it is about one of my favorite subjects on Earth, magic. Not magic like watching some depressed guy pull weasels out of a top hat at the Magic Castle, but M-A-G-I-C-K magic, which is all refers to that practice that is in every single world religion, in every single mythology, that series of rituals that allows human beings to access higher intelligence and use that information to transform the world around them. Always been fascinated by that. It's a fascinating topic, not just because what's cooler than the idea that we are surrounded by super intelligent beings that you can tune into using special hidden rituals that date back to before the time of the pyramids, but because as a mythology, it is something that is managed to thread its way through history. And it scares the shit out of certain people. They get scared by it. Just study the witch burnings and you'll see that this technology referred to in so many books, new and old, has always been considered somehow off limits, off base. It's breaking the rules to use this magic, and there's always an implicit danger in practicing magic. And from terrified Christian preachers talking about the dangers of meddling with the occult, and a simple YouTube search and you'll bring up 7,000 sermons of these pale-faced, anxiety-ridden paranoids who think that the act of invoking extra-dimensional beings can not only lead to personal catastrophe, but can also lead to the damnation of the soul. So that's another fascinating component about magic. It's not just, is it real? Could it be that there are higher dimensions inhabited by beings that we can contact using these specific incantations and rituals and modes of shifting consciousness, but that the very idea that it could be possible terrifies fundamentalists from Christianity to Islam to you name it, and every religion will have some kind of admonishment against practicing these things or communicating with disembodied beings. So that makes it cool too, because whenever anyone tells you not to go there, the first thing that you want to do is go there. And since I was young hearing about this stuff, it wasn't just hearing about the fact that there's something called magic or my first contact with tarot cards, for example. It was that these very things were terrifying to Christians and to superstitious people. And so the fact that there was a group of people who believed that certain things had a kind of a metaphysical toxicity that emanated out of them, it made that thing that much more compelling and interesting to study. To this day, there are friends that I have where if I have tarot cards around them, they get a little weirded out. Not weirded out like, do you really fucking believe that stupid shit? But weirded out like, oh, cross yourself in Transylvania, the vampire just went by. That's amazing that in the modern age, this Western mythology, this thing that they call esotericism, still manages to scare people, still manages to set off paranoia alarms in people when they consider that you could communicate with disembodied beings. It's the language, of course. The language itself is terrifying. You could say the exact same thing in a different way. For example, take my course and I'll teach you how to become inspired again and overcome your writer's block and connect once again to the creative part of yourself. And then that just seems like some kind of like writing class or a self-help class or something like that. You could say it like that, but if the symbols that you use to describe the potentiality of every human being to intentionally connect with an epiphany. If the language you use involves other beings, externalized, disembodied beings, or even if it refers to archetypical parts of the self, it still will scare people and sound like the occult. So we've been reduced to talking about inspiration and the very difficult to pin down moment that we've all had where a great idea pops into our head and we say, ah, this is it, the light bulb moment. That light bulb moment, if you could control it and have that light bulb moment whenever you wanted to have it, or if there were techniques that would bring you closer to moments of epiphany, then instead of it being something completely out of your control, then your life would exponentially improve. Because any time that you wanted to have a transmission of higher information, you could have it. And that's what magic's all about. It's just another symbol structure that people use to describe the enormous potentiality that all human beings have within them. And it just so happens that the symbols being used are generally of angels, gods, demigods, devas, deities, and generally invisible beings that if you do the right series of actions, then these beings will share their great wisdom with you. And that, yes, the very act of contacting these beings contains with it an implicit danger. And this danger is written about not just in Christian fundamentalist books that you might find at the used bookstore about some teenager who stumbles upon the Necronomicon and manages to gain some fame and popularity that ultimately results in a self-inflicted gunshot wound, but this warning can actually be found in the magic books themselves. And the practitioners will always tell you, be careful with this path because it is a super potent thing that can teach you and lead you to a higher state of consciousness, but it can also drive you mad. And that's fun to think about. So I'm super happy that Jason Louvre took the time to be in this episode of the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. We're going to get to the interview, but first, some business. So you finally did it. You managed to translate the dark and twisted runes that you found within the brown ancient pages of that strange book that your grandmother had left tucked underneath her mattress just above the playgirls. You use those runes to make contact with a higher intelligence, some kind of super intelligent being, an angel, alien, deva, goddess. Who knows? You're not sure. But the information this being filled you with is so powerful that you know the not logical next step is to blog about it. And you know that if you hire a web designer to distribute this information out into the world, the power and potency of this thing that you have come to understand would drive the web designer insane. And you don't want to have the blood of some poor HTML coder on your hands. You don't want to get that phone call hearing about how Larry, after looking at the text you wanted to publish, plunged his fingers covered in a fresh coat of Doritos dust directly into his eyeballs and ripped out his eyes, feeding them to his cat, and then running naked into traffic, exploding himself on the front of a passing semi. Do you want blood on your website? This information is too potent to allow it to travel through a web designer. You've got to plug it right into the collective, and the best way to do it is by going to squarespace.com and signing up for a membership. You can also sign up for a 2-week trial membership if you want to see if Squarespace is the right service for you for building a website. It's a great site. We are currently using it for the PodRift project, which you've probably heard me talk about, where we're trying to bring podcasting into VR space. So if you go to podrift.com, we built that site using Squarespace. You can get much more detailed than that, though. They have every single thing that you need. They have a shopping cart function. You can stream music. You can do whatever it is that you need to do to allow the super intelligent transmission that came to you from the ancient entity that you contacted using the rituals written about in the ancient manuscript covered in human skin that you found underneath the still warm mattress of your sweet darling Grammy. Just go to squarespace.com, use my name Duncan, and you will get 10% off. They also have incredible customer support. I tested it out to make sure, because no matter how simple a web service is, it can still be quite complicated, and you might just have some testicle questions. I have a lot of those. You might have some technical questions that you just need help with, and they'll get back to you right away. I tested this out. Also, the ultimate proof about how awesome Squarespace is that Squarespace was used to build Squarespace. Go figure that out. Maybe some kind of time travel was involved. I don't really understand that, and I haven't taken the time to... I guess you would build the service. I don't know how they did it. I don't know. So they're time travelers, too. So, do you want to go through, do you want to deal with your web designer going insane? Or even worse, do you want to end up getting sucked in by some kind of pseudo web designer? Let me tell you, there's literally 400 million pseudo web designers existing on planet Earth at this moment, according to a recent Levy Bergenson study. So, there's a lot of, people out there disguised as web designers who want nothing more than to find out your address and climb into your window at night and lay on top of you as you try to sleep. And it's awkward and annoying, and it's happened to a lot of us, and it's just not worth it. There are great web designers out there, in the same way that there's people in the government who can turn themselves into reptiles. It's just difficult to find them, and when you do find them, they want a lot of money. So, and they deserve the money, because actually coding a website takes years and years and years of experience. Anyway, this is a great way for you to dip your necromancer toe into the rivers of the internet without having to either destroy the mind of a web designer or risk getting laid on by a sweaty dude who smells like old magic cards and chewed up clove cigarette butts. Squarespace.com, put my name in, Duncan, you will get 10% off. Speaking of magic, I'm really excited to announce that the new Duncan Trussell Family Hour t-shirts designed by the great illustrator Ron Rigi are going to be in the store tomorrow. If you're listening to this on Tuesday in June, then they're going to be in the store on Wednesday. This is my favorite design yet, and it's because not only because it's awesome, and Ron Rigi is an incredible artist who like has truly created a magical thing, but because when I told him what I would like in the shirt, it was just that I want it to be an actual sigil that can ward against negative energy, and so he incorporated a lot of different alchemical symbols into this shirt, so that not only do you get to have a really cool t-shirt that just looks awesome, but you will be wearing a magical ward that will push away the poison psychic darts that your nemesis might be throwing at you through the astral plane. And if you don't believe in that bullshit, it's just a cool shirt. So go to DuncanTrussell.com and check out the shop and see if you like it and order one. And finally, as always, we are brought to you by Amazon.com. If you go to DuncanTrussell.com and go through our Amazon portal, the next time you're buying something from them, then they'll give us a very small percentage of anything that you buy, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. There's no point in venturing out into the world when you could be sitting in front of your glowing skull candle, muttering incantations, or riding your bicycle into nature. Why spend your time listening to malarial, measles-ridden children spray their diseased mucus all over the shelves of whatever chain store you were thinking about going to when you could be inhaling the sweet, magical perfume of your lover's neck or watching deer frolic in whatever wilderness is near your home? Go through our portal located at DuncanTrussell.com. All right, let's get this podcast going. Jason Louv is the editor of a really great book called Generation Hex, also the Psychic Bible. He is the protege of the world-renowned magician Genesis P. Orridge from Throbbing Gristle and Psychic TV. And he has an expansive and very technical knowledge of metaphysics, as well as Eastern mysticism and Eastern religion. He's got a website. You could find him at jasonlouv.com. He also teaches an online course on metaphysics and magic that you can find by going to magic.me, magic.me. And if you are listening to this on the week of June 10th, then you can sign up for an online class this weekend. And if you put my name in, Duncan, you'll get 10% off. So if you like this interview with Jason and you want to go deeper into the world of magic, go to magic.me, magic.me, and sign up for the course for the weekend. Let me know how it goes, because I might want to sign up for one of these courses eventually, but I'm going to be traveling into nature this weekend, so I'll be away from a computer. Hopefully, I'll be away from a computer. I'll have all those links located at duncantrussell.com. Thank you guys so much for listening and for putting up with my rants and long advertisements and for just existing in this universe with me. I love you all. Now, everybody, please welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast, the new magical advisor to the podcast, the great Jason Louv. There we go. We're rolling. Jason, welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. I'm really excited about this. I met you. You came to a comedy show that I did, and you brought me this really cool book that you edited called Generation Hex.
That's right.
And can you tell me what that book, I mean, I read the book, but tell the listeners what the book's about.
So that was my first book that I wrote in, well, I didn't write it just myself. It's an anthology that I edited in 2005 that was put out by Disinformation, which is it's kind of a look at where the Western magical tradition currently stands, and it's half practical writing, like grimoire-style writing, and half autobiographical. So it focuses on young people, and it kind of pitches magic as a youth culture. And when I was putting that book together, I knew maybe a dozen people that I could count on my hand who were into this stuff. Mm. Now it's everywhere.
Right.
You know, it's like it seems to have almost eclipsed the youth culture. So.
And can you give the listeners? I never say that. What did I suddenly just turn a weird radio show? Give me a definition of magic. How do you define magic?
Every time I think about this, I come up with something else, but I'll give you a couple different definitions. The poetic definition of magic is whereas a stage magician is interested in producing illusion for the entertainment of people, a real magician, so to speak, is interested in dispelling illusion.
Wow.
So removing illusions and showing people what's actually right there in front of your face. Because when you actually see reality, just in all its glory, I mean, and I'm not trying to make it sound like a big deal, but when you actually just really grasp what's right in front of your face, you know, we do live in a magical universe, and a truly profound, mystical, incredible process that we live in. And so magic is reminding you. It's a process of reminding you where you already are by dispelling the illusions that are kind of keep us from that. So that's the poetic definition. I think a more practical...
Great definition.
Thank you. I think a more practical definition is it's a series of techniques called from different religious traditions around the world for altering consciousness.
You know? Now, a lot of people, when they hear magic, they think they have a kind of, I don't know, primitive understanding of what it is, and they think that you're actually creating some sort of change in the external universe using hidden powers, dark matter, using some kind of unknown field that runs through everything, you're enacting change. Both of your definitions seem to, the change is an internal change.
Yes. There's the classic hermetic dictum, as above, so below. And the idea that you can get magic powers and change things all around you and make everything groovy for yourself, it doesn't exactly work like that. It works when you make changes in yourself, then your experience of your entire existence changes, because the universe is infinite, and the only thing keeping us from perceiving that is ourselves. So, the word magic kind of conjures up a lot of what you said, you know, kind of frightening definitions or
making someone fall in love with you, making an enemy fall out of a building, making it rain, that is like a lot of religions do involve wanting to create just basic change. And, you know, some religions say they don't use magic, even though they clearly are using magic, like Christianity, when you pray, you're sort of, it's the exact same thing, right? That's a form of magic. What you're talking about is it seems like a layer behind all that, or something that supersedes making changes in the world.
And part of what we're dealing with here is a marketing problem, right? You know, I didn't come up with the word magic. It's unfortunate that word has been tacked on to the Western esoteric tradition, the Western mystical tradition. And it's a double-edged sword, because it's at once repulsive to anyone who has any type of rational capacity to think, and at the same time, it's fascinating.
Right.
But do you read Ken Wilber at all?
Yeah, I have, quite some time ago, though.
So he has a really a perfect concept for untangling some of this stuff, which is called the pre-trans fallacy, where he basically says, you know, in his version of, by the way, Ken Wilber is, I guess, how would we describe him? He's like kind of a Buddhist philosopher.
/ Alan Watts level teacher guy. Right. Really intense, the best bald head in the universe.
Right, he's super buff.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, totally.
He's in his late 60s, I think.
Yeah, very healthy, disciplined version of, I don't know, the combination Alan Watts, self-help stuff in there too. He's got some serious devotees.
Right. He's kind of like the real-life Dr. Manhattan from
there
Watchmen.
You go. That's it. That's what we were looking for. He's like Dr. Manhattan.
So I don't totally agree with everything Ken Wilber says, but he has an excellent, excellent concept that he brings up in one of his books called the pre-trans fallacy, which basically he says human beings and human cultures go through developmental stages. And they start out in mythic reality, and they go to magic. And magic is actually, in his viewpoint, one of the earliest stages of human development. In fact, human beings at around the age of 7 go through a developmental stage called magical thinking, where you think that everything around you is caused by you. So, for instance, the whole step on a crack thing.
Yeah. Never got out of that phase.
Right. Me neither, I don't think. But he says that in the normal course of development, you kind of develop out of this into rational, and then that cultures also develop out of this into rational, modernist, and then postmodernist thinking, and that we're currently in a stage of postmodernism as a culture. But he says that after this are states that might be mapped by, for instance, the Western mystical tradition or Tibetan Buddhism or Vedanta, where you start to realize that, that there is a divine component to human beings, and that the more you tap into that, the more that you are aligned with the universe, the more that you work on yourself, that there is a type of ability to develop spiritually. But that's kind of what I was saying, where it's you're working on yourself, where you realize, like Michael Jackson said, you have to, if you want to make change, you have to start with the man in the mirror, right?
Yes.
You realize that you are the holographic projection of the universe. It's like, if you want to change the world, you have to start with yourself.
You're the fountainhead. You're the thing that everything's emerging from.
Exactly.
You're the sprinkler. It's like, if you try to change the droplets that are already being projected out of the thing, it's you're being tricked by yourself. Why do we hide from that knowledge. It seems like an active part of humanity that does not want to accept the fact that they're seeing reflections of themselves all around right. them. It's so much more fun to believe, or not more fun, but there's something that relieves us of responsibility when we imagine that we are being victimized by external right. forces, and that if right. we change those external forces, then suddenly we'll become better.
Right. Well, I think a couple points to that. One is you know, Wilbur's final point on that is that what he called the pre-trans fallacy is that he says our culture is currently in a phase of postmodern development where it's like deconstruction. Everything has to be, you know, what we see from like Gawker blogs, right? But he says that to...
What do you mean what we see from Gawker blogs?
Basically, well, he describes this as the green meme, and I don't want to get too into technical discussion, but basically he says that in our current cultural period is a period of evolving out of religion, where so we've left religion to the wayside. We depend on science, but there's no we don't really have any guiding spiritual truth. So we're stuck in a period of deconstruction where everyone is constantly deconstructing everything that everyone says. So
yes.
you know, cynicism, sarcasm, lack of meaning, and the pre-trans fallacy is that for people stuck in the postmodern worldview. They see states beyond that, like, for instance, what we were just talking about, all the stuff that you talk about on your podcast. For people think that that's pre-developmental. They confuse this with the earlier magic stages
right.
and think that this is a primitive way of thinking, when in fact it's a more advanced way of thinking.
You're talking about the return to the garden idea, right? Coming back to the Garden of Eden. Like,
yeah, there's no going back.
There's no going back.
So, but I think, in terms of why do people, there's so many answers to that question. You know, people are afraid of taking responsibility. They don't necessarily have access to the information and the tools to do it, which is, you know, I think your podcast is great for that.
Thanks.
And it's not, we're just getting, you know, we're currently in a period of evolving towards that I think is more profound because of the internet, more profound, more accelerated, and more effective than the consciousness raising in the 60s was.
Yeah.
So we're getting there.
But it's more, insidious. People, I think in the 60s, it was right in front of everyone's faces, like, because the way that people were reaching other people was in a more public way. You go, you know, they have these huge events, be-ins, and all those, you see these incredible pictures of, like, Woodstock, or like, I can't remember which is holy person, Maharishi Yogan, I don't remember which of them it is, but I have this great picture of him sitting in front of just a sea of people back in the 60s, talking to them. The difference is we are, right, you know, at this moment, you and I are sitting in front of an ocean of people mm-hmm. who are listening to this, only we don't get to see them, so it's hidden. That's what's right. amazing about this change that's happening, is that it's happening in a very secret way, which I think has got to be a nightmare to the powers that, you know, waged war against the cultural revolution that was happening in the 60s. It was very easy to suppress, too, because it was so out in front of you. Whereas this is just like people at work, people driving their car, people walking their dog, but they're getting to hear this kind of information that way back in the day, if you wanted to get it out there, you'd have to print some kind of, like, I don't know, a Xerox thing that you hand out to people, or maybe publish a book, but still, that you're exactly right. So, it seems as though a spell has been cast on us by popular culture, that
yes.
we've all been hypnotized or sort of held captive by the media, corporations, commercials. We have all these spells that have been placed inside of our minds. that make us believe we're being original people when in fact we're just following cultural trends and we don't even know that we've been lured into that. Do you think that's true?
I definitely think there's truth to that. And I used to assign a lot more, sinister intent to, for instance, big media structures and things like that. But the more that I've worked in big media, and I used to work in advertising, and the more that I've seen things from the other side of the curtain, and the blog I'm running, Ultra Culture, every day having to depend on what can I do to get people's attention, what do people actually want, the more I realize that the media is actually, as much as we're enthralled to the media is even more enthralled to what the demand of the public is.
Right.
And so, for instance, the stuff you see on Facebook, people will always have a demand for stories about school shootings or stories about
anyone getting attacked by an animal.
Bear
attacks, cougar attacks are fucking huge, man. Especially if someone was antagonizing an animal. If you can find a video of someone antagonizing an animal and then the animal clawing them,
right?
Oh,
well, I'll click that.
I'll click that. That's glory. Or a matador being impaled by that beautiful picture of the matador with a bull horn going through his balls. Because it's like you get to enjoy universal justice. You don't have to feel sorry for that guy so much because he was like sticking a monster with a spear.
But if you post, okay, here's how to become enlightened by the Maharishi, you're going to get 400 clicks.
Yawn. No thanks. Right. No thanks. So, nobody wants to hear that. It's fucking boring. If it was something like how, yeah, I know. So yes, that's a challenge.
So I think that it the media is just a projection of us, and they're enthralled to their advertisers, but they're more enthralled to the public. The media has one simple job, which is to get the attention of people so they can sell that attention to advertisers. And
that's a crazy way to put that, man.
that's crazy.
So they're like attention harvesters.
Yeah,
they have these attention farms where they grab human attention.
Yes.
In the same way people sell debt, they sell in attention. They're like, wow, check it out, man. I've got this acres and acres and acres of human attention just ready to be focused on your car, the car you're trying to sell.
Right, exactly.
Now, if that's not magic, I don't know what is, man. And because isn't one of the big premises of magic that human attention, if you're saying that we are, by transforming our internal universe, this is the thing that will affect change in our external universe because everything around us is a kind of projection, then that would mean that if you could control this attention, if you could control if you can harmonize, in other words, if I can take a certain number of people and turn their attention in the direction of some paradigm, then that will create a kind of magnifying glass effect. It's like now instead of just having one person's internal universe shifting according to my persuasive idea of how things work, I have a million people who have shifted their attention in that way. And if anything is going to create a change in the external universe, shit, that would definitely be it.
Absolutely. But it's got to come organically, right? I mean, you can't force people to be into anything. So, the reason that the media is focused on lowest common denominator stuff is because generally that's what most people want. So it's very hard for somebody even Rupert Murdoch, right? I mean, he could do broadcast Duncan Trussell to the entire planet, right? And
yes,
it would be great. The question is, or me, or anybody, right? The question is the mass demand. That's what we have to work with, and our reality. I always used to be in the, there's the classic Gnostic idea that reality is controlled and created by this demiurge or this crazy being.
What's he called? The demiurge.
The
that's
demiurge,
what he's called.
Right? Is the false creator god.
Yeah.
The blind creator.
He's the one
god
that the Romneys worship.
Exactly, right? Tag, most of all.
Yeah.
I think the reality is that we're all in charge of this reality. Reality is created by the net of all human beings.
Yes.
It's just that their aesthetics don't necessarily appeal to maybe you or me, right? But Nancy Grace is real big for most people.
Well, she's but you know, again, if you go back to the fact that these are fucking attention harvesters, fishermen for attention, that they're trying to catch these little units, these packets of attention that exist in every single person and focus them on these ridiculous things. You know, I know that you think it's not sinister, but God damn it, I think that's a sinister fucking act. Nancy Grace, for example,
right,
by sucking the attention of all of us. You know, man.
They're like misery harvesters.
Well, yeah. They're, what they do is, I'm addicted to cycling. Sorry, you guys. I'm not going to go on another cycling rant. I've gotten addicted to cycling. There's a ride that goes up into Griffith Park. It goes on a closed road. Last night, I'm riding my bike up there. The sun's setting. It is beautiful. No one's up there, man. It's just a closed road that goes up for probably 4 miles into Griffith Park up this hill. So it's like, you know, you have to be willing to go uphill for like an hour to even get up there. So no one's, if you see anybody up there, it's these weird Lycra cyclists with that like sort of gritting their teeth with that strange obsessed look in their eyes. But I'm up there, man, and there's this rock you can go sit on. I'm sitting out in this rock looking, the sun setting, you can see Glendale, there's mist rolling in, and I'm hearing in my fucking head the narrator's voice from I Shouldn't Have Survived. You know, like I'm thinking like, oh,
that
dude,
was the mountain lion attack about to happen.
Yes, exactly. Yes, I'm imagining a fucking mountain lion sitting behind me about to jump on me. I'm considering like, well, you know what? I didn't bring my fucking phone. So if a mountain lion drags me down this hill and like slowly eats me over the next couple of days, no one's going to know where I was. This is a classic. I Shouldn't Have Survived. Now, if I don't know for sure, but I think if my mind hadn't in some way absorbed the myriad of doom stories, which are actually very small compared to the number of nature experiences people had, then I'd be more likely to just be like, man, this is fucking beautiful. But this shadow runs through it. That's why I say it's sinister. That's why I think it's sinister what the media is doing. Maybe not intentionally sinister, but God damn it.
Oh, it is sinister. Absolutely. I just think that as I've understood the economics of it more, I understand why it is the way it is, but it's always been that way since the days of yellow journalism in the 19th century.
Right.
So you go back, they're doing the same stuff now that they did then, and it's always just harp on the negative. And but you're absolutely right. It has a magical effect because the more you focus on that, the more it becomes magnified in people's minds. And then that defines people's reality. They think that's what reality is.
And that leads to the fire. See, that the heat builds in people's minds. This is the alchemical friction, right? We have this heat building in the minds of a certain number of people, and the fire that breaks out is the societal change, and that is what they call trends, you know? Like, well, what do you know? Will Ferrell did a fucking Range Rover commercial, and 6 zillion people bought a fucking Range Rover. This is a fire created by people that I would consider magicians who are exacting change in the universe that is designed to make basically in the same way a solar panel transforms sunlight into energy, the media translates attention into money. It's a converter. It turns our attention into action, which results in money for super wealthy people.
Like
that we
three
don't
people.
What?
Like three people.
Three of the great the great ones. Yes. The wizards. We don't even know who they are. They probably live in fucking towers. They probably are covered in weird tattooed runes. Yep. You knew it already, runes!
But yet, at the same time, I think that we live in probably the greatest period to be alive ever. You know,
yes.
I mean, like, when you think about, I mean, look, penicillin was only invented a few decades ago. You know, the birth control pill was only invented a few decades ago.
Right.
You know, people used to only live till like 30.
Yes.
And
people look like shit, man. You cut back to the 40s. If you look at people in their 40s, they look like people in their 80s. Now.
Right. So we live in a beautiful paradise planet, yet at the same time we're facing these civilization-wide real problems like climate change.
Yes.
And that's not being focused on by the media at all. The New York Times shut down their environmental desk. It's not profitable for them. Yet these are the real issues that we need to be focused on. So the media not only makes us feel that we're trapped in this horrific reality. They're not even focusing on the real problems. So.
Right. So they're turning our attention to these minuscule problems, like a coyote ripped apart a folk singer in Canada. So now
that
it's
happened?
Like, what?
That happened?
Oh, yeah, sure did. A whole pack of coyotes. It's apparently one of the only known coyotes. Poor folk singer just went hiking and she got eaten by coyotes.
Yikes.
Yikes. But again, it's like, yeah, that happens like once every, you know, 100 years. Whereas, you know,
that's actually planned by the coyotes. It's like, they're in their ceremonial calendar. They have the great day of folk singer rending.
They
every
summon
100
the,
years.
They've summoned the folk singer. She was actually raised to feed them. They got there, her parents to meet, you know, they
probably found her in Griffith Park as a kid and raised her up.
Well, you know, that's another thing we can get into. But, like, you look at Shane Smith. You write for Vice. You look at Shane mm-hmm. Smith, and you watch, you know, you see what's happening with him is that the deeper and deeper he gets into the subject matter of his awesome HBO documentary series, you know, you really see his face, especially the climate change stuff, and he's like, oh, fuck,
right.
This is really spooky, man. Like,
yeah.
This stuff is, but,
well, this is why, you know, there's a pervasive feeling of hopelessness. And I think that one of the reasons people don't, people don't face the real issues like climate change is because that happens. They just get into this zone of like, you know, we're fucked. There's nothing we can do.
Right.
It's hopeless. But, I think that one of the real, places for the Western mystical tradition or any mystical tradition that is, you know, any real one, is to put you in a place of understanding what's going on, being able to look at things clearly without flinching, and not being hopeless, you know, because that's the great gift that these belief systems, or excuse me, not belief systems, but systems of techniques, experimental systems, have given me is a way of training consciousness so that I can look at things like that and not be overwhelmed and look at them as, well, this is a big problem, but, you know, we've faced all of the huge problems we've as a civilization that we've had to face before, and there are solutions, and we need to look at those things and think about them without flinching and decondition ourselves from all the stuff we've just been talking about, like the spell of the media and the spell of everyday life, so that we can really focus on the really important things instead of, you know, how many Facebook followers do I have?
Oh, God.
Right.
What's an example of one of these techniques that you might use to dispel the dark magic that has been wrapped around our poor brains by the Nancy Graces of the world?
Meditation. You know, first and foremost, I think it all comes back to meditation, because the more you meditate, the more you realize, the more you see through the noise of your own mind, and the more you realize, the less you're yanked around by your emotions and your own thoughts, and you realize that, you know, for instance, if you're up at 4 a.m. in the morning, you know, thinking all these dark thoughts of all these things you think are going to happen, the more you meditate, you realize, well, no, that's just, you know, that none of that's real. And meditation is when you train your mind against itself, which is the biggest enemy you could ever possibly have.
Yes.
When you train the mind to quiet itself and overcome itself, you know, the media is no problem at all after that.
Right. And what form of meditation do you practice?
Well, I stick pretty closely to the classic Hindu Raja Yoga, the Eightfold Path of Yoga, which I've taught online as well. But I think
by the way, let me stop you there.
Okay.
Guys, Jason has, I probably already mentioned this in the beginning, but if you missed the beginning somehow, Jason's got an awesome online course that teaches this stuff. And clearly he knows what he's talking about, so check that out. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry, I want to give you a plug. Sorry.
Thank you. Yeah, it's I've been I'm constantly teaching courses on magic meditation, health, consciousness alteration, consciousness expansion, and the website. There are in live webinars. The website for that is magic.me. So magic with a K, magick.me.
Cool.
So yeah, but I think that any type of meditation, I mean, there's Buddhist forms, which are more based around mindfulness.
What's the Raja Yoga form?
Raja Yoga is, it's the original classic form of meditation. Largely, it's talked about as the Eightfold Path of Yoga. And it's a step-by-step system where first you start out with essentially putting, you know, to grossly oversimplify, you start out with putting your life in order so that you're not dealing with chaos and distraction all the time, and you have, for instance, a quiet place to meditate every day. And then it progresses from there to asana, which is keeping your body still, pranayama, which is breath control. So at which point you are able to have a huge degree of control over your own mind and body, and it goes from there to inward. So the withdrawal of the senses inward to the focus on one object, one point of concentration, to the point where eventually you your distinction between yourself and your object of meditation disappears.
Wow, that's so cool. And I love that it starts off with getting your shit together. Because I think so many people...
I don't think that's the Sanskrit term for it, but that's what it is.
Because, you know, it's such an easy thing to, like, ignore. Like, you have this, like, chaos storm swirling around you. You have, you know, shit you got to deal with, man. You know, like, you have to deal with, like, basic worldly stuff. First, I love that that's the first thing, because also it implies that's the easiest thing. And a lot of people think that that's the hardest thing to do.
I think it probably is the hardest. And a lot of people think about yoga meditation as, oh, you're going to go off into a cave and meditate. And I think in, especially in a lot of the Eastern systems, that's considered as kind of, in, can be considered a bit of a cop-out. It's actually much harder and more difficult to develop a mystical and meditative practice in the real world. And I think that this is what people need, because Western people are definitely in the world.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's, I mean, I challenge you to find a quiet cave these days. There's probably every fucking cave in the world has a goddamn Kodak film stand in front of it, or an ice cream truck going right by every day.
And there'll be kids watching Nancy Grace on their iPhones.
Yeah, there's no quiet caves. There's no, right. I bet you can't even find a cave that doesn't have a wireless connection these days. There's just no way to find quiet caves.
No, like, it's true.
Now, was this the type of meditation that Crowley was into?
Yes, it actually was, but obviously it goes back a much longer than Crowley.
Oh yeah, but
10,000 years or so. But he had a pretty clear take on it. He took it mostly from Swami Vivekananda, who was one of the first people to bring Eastern philosophies to the West in the 1890s.
But for you, it doesn't just, it's meditation is, it doesn't begin and end with meditation. It seems like you are aware of some of the ceremonial practices that are recommended as well in magic, right?
Yes. Well, ceremonial magic, I mean, it's so easy to get tangled up in thinking, because we're so conditioned by, you know, the media. And the first thing people think about when they think about ceremonial magic is, you know, Hammer horror, Christopher Lee mode, you know.
Yeah.
And really, all that, basically, ceremonial magic is the Western form of meditation, and it's meditating with symbols outside of yourself, instead of, similar to, you know, Buddhist mandala meditation. So it's exteriorizing consciousness into symbols and objects around yourself and manipulating it that way, instead of purely internally, which is
the sword, form. The cup. The pentacle, right?
All of which just simply represent facets of consciousness, your own consciousness.
What does the sword represent?
The sword represents the analytic mind, the ability to see clearly, to you know, scientific analysis, to reason, your rational function.
And the cup?
The cup is your ability to receive inspiration and guidance from the universe. So basically what people talk about when they talk about gratitude, that's the cup.
And the pentacle.
The pentacle is your mastery of the physical world. And so, for instance, your bank account, getting the material aspects of your life together, as well as your understanding of the universe, your assembled facts about the universe.
Do you own robes?
I can neither confirm nor deny.
See, God damn it! Here's the thing, man. I love I'm not gonna say I love meditation. Let's face it; that's a thorny path for me. But I do. When I am meditating, I know that my life tends to get better. But what you're describing there, now that to me, man, that sounds like where the juice is. I love sitting and meditating. It's cool. I practice mindfulness. Listen to Jack Kornfield. Walking the dog. Follow my breaths. Sit and look and feel my body and watch the wild writhing snakes of my mind go insane at every moment. But man, what you just described, man, that sounds fun. Because when you're saying we focus on these symbols ceremonially, you don't mean that you sit and think about those symbols. Like, there's an actual, because I've read it, man, there's some very juicy, beautiful ceremonies recommended by Crowley, by in so many of these grimoires. How did you say grimoire? Because I haven't mispronounced.
Like you said it, yeah.
Grimoires, yeah. That are beautiful. Smack those robes on, circle on the floor. You know what I mean? Intone the correct chants while burning incense, theatrically act out all these things. That sounds fun.
Right. And it is fun, right? And although I'll point out that it's generally considered, Crowley even describes it as a prelude to meditation. You know, it allows you more control over your mind through enacting it. But the ultimate goal is you know, probably better served by meditation. Maybe that's not what you want to hear, but...
It is, and it never is. No one ever tells me what I want to hear on this podcast. That's what I like. I just want someone to say, wear some black robes, get a goddamn cauldron, say these words, and you're going to be able to astrally project at night and not orgasm within 2 minutes.
And you'll be hanging out with Fairuza Balk from The Craft
Yeah, that idea. That's a fun idea. But, man, you know... I gotta say, man, you know, the times that I have experimented with that stuff and gotten super, super stoned, and in your book, Generation Hex, many people in there talk about using substances to alter their consciousness when they're performing these magical rituals. I have had experiences that I haven't had meditating. I've had experiences. Now, are these experiences ultimately, getting off the path and like ending up getting distracted in some weird forest? Yeah, maybe. Like, are they like leading to some kind of state of still mind, expansive consciousness necessarily? I don't think so. But when I was doing them, it wasn't for that. You know, so many things that we do aren't just for that kind of tranquility and stability that you're talking about. So many things that we do are for fun. And what's wrong with that?
I think that's well put. If you want to be completely strict about it, essentially, you know, the magical discipline, especially when you combine entheogens with it, will give you incredible fucking experiences like you've discussed. They're ultimately more illusion in the end.
But so is the X-Men movie.
But so is the X-Men. That's very true. So
let's pause X-Men for movie. One quick second.
Essentially.
Yeah.
But for Crowley, he thought, well, okay, how do we turn this on? You know, is there an actual method for inducing this state? You know, whether somebody's, like you said, I mean, somebody could think they're talking to an angel, a goddess, Satan. What if it's all the same? What if this is just like something that, either something that happens in the brain or it really is something mystical? Either way, is there a technique for inducing that? And if we can do that, how much faster would we advance as a civilization? And in fact, he says that's kind of the only, at one point in his later years, he says this might be our only hope for getting out of the world crisis, essentially. And this was in the 40s. He was looking at World War II, but now with global warming, things like this, you know, human thinking alone has not been able to fix the problem. So we need to enhance our ability to be conduits, maybe, as long as we're conduits of the right things, I would suggest.
Yeah, well, that's something. There's a great Ram Dass quote where he says, just because a being is disembodied doesn't mean it's telling the truth.
Oh, yes. It's assholes all the way up and all the way down. You know, as I found out. But no,
you've
that's totally
run into
true.
Assholes on the astral plane, huh?
Well, all of it. Okay, here's how I look at it. The Buddhists, right, they say the most precious thing in the universe is a human birth, right? Like, they always say that, you know, it's like the most precious human incarnation. So, you know, one of the things that Genesis Peorage used to point out to me was...
And could you tell everyone who Genesis Peorage is? Because okay. A lot of people might not know.
So Genesis Peorage Genesis Breyer Peorage is, you know, one of the great magicians of the 20th century and is my primary mentor. You know, I studied for 7 years with very directly with Jen and edited the Psychic Bible with her. Jen basically started the band Throbbing Gristle, which was the first industrial band, went on to start Psychic TV, which was one of the first acid house bands. It was very influential and pretty much responsible for popularizing industrial music, rave, to some extent, rave acid house music, body piercing and all tattooing as a major phenomenon, and also magic, because they were running a magical order in the 80s called the Temple of Psychic Youth, which was focused on the democratization of sex magic techniques that had previously basically been guarded by a few hardcore Crowley people.
And wouldn't they send out VHS tapes to watch and stuff?
Yeah, they would send out VHS tapes of, you know, group orgies, you know, like sexual magical actions. It's pretty intense stuff even now. It's hard for me to watch some of it. But
What do you mean? What's an example of something that would be hard for you to watch on this VHS?
Well, a lot of it is in that DVD that comes with the book, but they would, you know, they would you know, a lot of magic can be, you know, a lot of the magic we've been talking about is very high intellectual, almost academic magic, which is kind of my kick. But another form of magic is essentially purely about getting into altered states. And a lot of that can be done with, you know, I would compare to, you know, self-flagellation, like the Jesuits, or pain, extreme mental states, drugs,
what's
sex.
The thing you have had a hard time looking at, man? I want to hear it.
there was some that, like, group, what looked like group kind of group bloodletting rituals.
Wow.
But Jen is very cheeky too, so a lot of that was cut together to look more intense than it actually was. And they were raided by Scotland Yard in the 1990. The country came down on them. There were 10,000 people in Topi, the Temple of Psychic Youth, at the peak of it. It was a serious deal. And they got raided by the government because some of these videos were seen, and they were way taken out of context. And they came down, and Jen was basically sent in exile out of the country.
Oh, my God. That's how you know you're doing it right, man. Crowley got exiled too, right? When they kick you out of the country.
He was exiled by Mussolini from... Mussolini thought he was a degenerate influence. So
get him out. When you get kicked out of your country for doing magic, you are a badass.
I got thrown out of Canada. That's my claim,
for
too.
For what?
For... I was up there doing magic. I was living up there for a year, and they figured out I was living with my girlfriend, which was a big no-no. But it was a huge, you know, it was a huge...
What do you mean? You can't live with your girlfriend in Canada?
Apparently not. But I was thrown out. I was involved in really heavy magical work, and I ended up at the border, as these things happen, at the exact wrong time, where there was, like, a biker gang going through with a murderer, and they had heavy security on it, and they looked at me and decided I was suspicious and exiled me from the country, although I'm allowed back in now. Not quite as dramatic as a story, but that's my getting thrown
out
of the
country. So you got wrapped up, like, they thought you were in a motorcycle gang. It wasn't because you were living with your girlfriend.
No, that was the reason.
I don't get it. Why? What's the reason?
I guess it's not legal to do that for an American citizen.
To live with a girl in Canada if you're American. How old was the girl?
22, I think. So, yeah, no.
Damn it. It really is.
It was confusing. But anyways,
can someone email me about the law that you can't live with a girl in Canada if you're not from Canada? That is wild. I've never heard that before.
It was something about, if I remember, it was something about cohabiting, and I don't know. But they had temporary workers, because the real Canadian Border Patrol had walked off because they didn't want to get shot by the guy in the biker gang.
Wow.
So I may have ended up with people who didn't fully know the law.
Do you think this drama, because sometimes, you know, a lot of times when I've run into people who are really into magic, they always do have a lot of drama in their life.
That was something you said to me when we first met, and you're totally right. And I think that one of the reasons why I'm... to bring it back to how we got on this topic, you know, a human body is a very precious thing to have. You know, why do all these beings want into human bodies? It must be a condition better than being a disembodied astral being. But the second part of that is, you know, one of the reasons why I think that most of the drama that people experience in magic, or when they have a bad time, it usually comes from two things. One is, or three things. One is drugs. You know, people get really into drugs, and drugs have their own, you know, negative effects.
Right.
You know, over and above anything you're thinking about or doing. Second is taking it too seriously, like I think the thing with Crowley, where you think all this stuff you're experiencing is actually real, and you're acting as if it's real, and then life just gets extremely confusing.
Yeah.
And the third is with when people get really into spirit contact and they try contacting the wrong spirits, then I think that all of those things, and I don't even think spirit contact is a good idea necessarily. I think that magic for me is a process of disciplining the self and becoming a better version of yourself instead of trying to sell out to another being, perhaps, at least certainly not initially, you know, but contacting higher intelligences is a big deal, but you have to understand managing boundaries and understand what's, how to figure out what's good and what, for lack of a better terminology, what's good and what's not. So to simplify all that, the reason people have drama is, I think, lack of training, and because they get too far in over their heads too fast.
Yes, because when you read, you know, any of these texts, they don't say, oh yeah, just like, here, mutter these incantations and like smoke a joint and you'll be able to talk to an angel and afford a new car. They have like a kind of surgical, as the way they describe it is like going into surgery. The yes. preparation is like yes. serious, decontaminating the area psychically, and so much preparation. It's not just like buy the Necronomicon at the, you know, right. used bookstore, and like it's serious.
And the reason that is because you have to know exactly what you're doing and make sure that you get exactly what you asked for. And a lot of times people get into trouble because they just open themselves up too much, which is a lot of what I see in, you know, people like heavy psychedelics use, or, you know, perfect example. You know, I knew a girl here in LA who was wanting to, she wanted me to help her. She was like, come to my art space and help me do magic with everyone. I'm like, okay, well, what are you doing? She was like, well, we're opening a portal. Mm. Okay, what are you opening a portal to? Well, we're just opening a portal. It's like, yeah. That doesn't make any sense, and you don't want to do that because, you know, it's kind of like the world of magic, whether it's in your mind or not, you know, the astral plane, is just as varied as the real world. There's just as many types of people.
There's a South Central.
There's a South Central. Oh yeah, I've been there. It's not fun.
You've been there. What is it like? Can you describe what you're talking about? Like, what is that like? Going, let's take me through.
I can tell you the worst trip I've ever had, but it will bum you out and everybody on who listens to this entire podcast. And I should probably might want to keep it to myself.
Wow. Now you gotta say it, man. Now you can't just let's hear it, and then after you say it, let's cleanse it with some positivity.
Okay,
but come
okay.
on, let's hear
all
it.
Right. Worst trip I ever had was this was shortly before I was thrown out of Canada. Was this was on mushrooms and Syrian rue. Have you done that?
I've heard Syrian rue is brutal.
It was fucking brutal. It was because that's the one that I guess from what I understand, my limited understanding of chemistry, there is DMT naturally occurring in psilocybin mushrooms. But your brain has a thing called monoamino oxidase, or MAO, which breaks down DMT. That's why when you smoke DMT, it only lasts 5 or 10 minutes.
Yep.
If you there's a basically, I think it's like a bark called Syrian rue, which is an MAO inhibitor. So it inhibits that thing in your brain, which breaks down DMT, which means you get the ayahuasca effect from the mushroom. So I call it like MacGyver ayahuasca, because all that ayahuasca is stuff that has DMT with stuff that has MAO inhibitors,
right.
And I think some other stuff. So it was, you know, 6 hours of hyper vivid brutality, right? And I think I was in like a warehouse in, you know, like East Brooklyn. And the hallucination, I think this is really brutal. The hallucination was, this is what I consider the abyss. They talk about the abyss experience. You've heard about this one?
No.
And,
I mean, I've heard, maybe, but what do you mean?
In the Western magical tradition, there's a concept called the abyss, which is it's considered the separation between divinity and mankind, but it's also, as I experienced it, it's, you know, the, you know, well, let me put it in a different language. The Buddhist concept of suffering, you know, universal suffering.
Yes.
So that's a lot more intense when you do it on MacGyver ayahuasca than it is on when you just read it, right?
Yeah.
So the trip started out with, you know, the journalist Daniel Pearl?
I've heard of him, yes.
He was a guy who was beheaded.
Oh, yeah.
So,
I saw that video. It's awful.
Yeah. So the first hour of the trip was me being beheaded by jihadis, right? And it was, what was it? It zoomed out and it was essentially, I'm trying to remember because this is 2006. It's written up in my book, Queen Valentine, but it was basically, this was after Generation Hex came out, and I was during a undergoing a process. It was kind of like, oh, you think you're a big magician, right?
Right.
You think you're real clever. You put out these books on magic. It's like, oh, yeah, like you got all the secrets of the universe. All right, let's show you something, right? And so it went from this kind of like, it went from that to essentially merging with all of the suffering in the entire world all at once. And it was, you know, it was kind of like, you know, you're a woman, you're a mother in Africa waking up knowing that your child died of famine, and you're going to wake up with that every day, and that's reality. Or you're living in Haiti in like this total absolute misery where it's just like, you know, there's no hope. And just like experiencing all this, like, you know, these war zones, you know, Vice magazine, right? Like,
yes.
Welcome to the war zones.
Yes.
Welcome to all the suffering in the world.
Yes.
And it was kind of like, okay, so you know all those things so it was basically, oh, yeah, you think you're a big magician. Well, nope. There is only suffering in the world, and everything else, you know, anytime that you think you've been bigger than somebody else or more important than somebody else, that just adds to the suffering.
Oh, shit.
Right? And it's like, what was it? It was like, and then it was like, okay. And then I kind of zoomed out, and it was like, I saw this image of all the suffering. And it was almost like the trip was almost like I was in a war zone. Like when you see those war movies where the camera's shaking and everything's like awful, and they're just total like G.I. Jane or something like that. But, I zoomed out and I saw there was a mountain of all the Catholic saints, right? And everyone's like dragging, everyone's essentially broken and dragging themselves to this and praying to the saints. And the mountain of saints is just, they're looking down at everyone, you know, and they're part of this system of misery. They exist there just to give people false hope.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, oh, fuck. And then it was zoom out and I see the world, and there were like these beings, these looked like invisible jellyfish all around the world. And I was like, okay, what is this? And it's like, these are all the gods that people pray to for relief from the suffering. And they're parasites that are sucking up all this false hope, essentially. And the false hope only exists to make things worse. Because when you think there's hope, then the suffering is even better.
Wow.
Right? And I was like, oh, fuck. And then, this was awful. And everyone in the room was experiencing the same thing, which was really strange. People were like throwing up and shitting themselves and in the real world. And then it zoomed out even further. And then the final part of it was I saw there was the ring of Buddhas that circled the universe, and they all looked like Tibetan monks, and they were chanting, and they were doing the Buddhist thing of, you know, we want, we have compassion for all sentient beings.
Yeah.
They're doing the Buddhist generation of compassion.
Yeah.
Where they're chanting for everything. And the final message was, the only possible way to win the game is to have compassion for everything, but you will still suffer.
That's beautiful.
Heavy.
That's beautiful, and it's heavy. And that's the thing, man. What you're talking about is, it's like, if you want the info, you can have the info. If you want to know where your hamburgers are coming from, you can go on YouTube right now and see where they're coming from. It's not going to be pretty. And this notion that we have that when you get the information download, that somehow it's going to make you feel great, that really does fly.
No.
At first, it won't.
At first, well... But here's the thing, right? I mean, that experience took me, that wasn't just a trip. I mean, that was, you know, that experience wrecked me. And it took me about 2 or 3 years to come back from that, where I stopped writing. I stopped putting books out. I was just like, that, you know, people talk about they want their ego shut down. Like they're going to live in, you know, Narnia, but that's not how it works, at least in my case. And, you know, it took me a long time to come back from that. And one of the things that encouraged me, by the way, to return to doing what I was doing is listening to your podcast. It really cheered me up out of that dark place.
That's amazing. Thank you.
It really did. Because for the longest time I was convinced, that this is all bullshit and nobody wants it. But out of that experience, that's when I started to get more heavily into Indian mysticism, Vedanta, things like the Indian gurus or Neem Karoli Baba, people
yes.
like that. And what I realized was that is just, that's there, that experience is there, but it's not ultimate reality. It's certainly one way to look at reality. But then you realize that just on the other side of that, you know, ultimately the universe is a loving, infinite, wonderful place. And that's one, it's kind of like, that's one potential place, that's one potential way we can see the world. That's all that is happening, you know, like global warming, you know, the torture of animals, the torture of people, the torture of the third world, you know, globalization, GMOs, all that stuff, you know, like it's, you know, there's constant misery in the world. But out of that, but combined with this sense that nobody's in charge or nobody's going to fix it. But out of that, for me at least, the important message was, well, then at least I have to do something. You know, it's like and I think that's the dispelling of illusion. You know, that's why magic is disillusioning. It takes the illusion away about what reality is, but then it does leave you with empowerment, but not in the way that, you think it's going to. Not like I'm going to, you know, summon Jessica Alba to be my girlfriend, but in the sense of, okay, well, you know, this is the, what Gurdjieff called it, the terror of the situation, right? And yeah, you know Gurdjieff.
Yeah, sure.
And it's like, yeah, that's what's going on. So, but at the same time, you know, that's only part of it. We also live in a beautiful paradise planet where everyone is becoming smarter and better and more divine every day, and we're learning more and more about the world every day through, you know, with the internet, and we have all these incredible technologies. And you know, as things improve, it's kind of like, maybe it's like, as things, you know, things are really bad and really great at the same time, and we have all the tools and the ability and the technology to take reality into our own hands and be a positive force in the world.
Oh, I love it, man. That is really cool. And I think you do need to see the jellyfish before you can understand the other part of it. You do need to see that. Do you think that you can tell us something that we can do this week, like a simple magical ritual or a simple act that we could do to sort of bring more of this, actualize more of this positivity or this emerging potentiality that you're talking about out into the world?
Yeah, just make a promise to, you know, because magic doesn't have to be complicated. You can go outside and talk to the universe. Just look up at the fucking sky and talk, and you know, that's good enough. You know, that's more than good enough.
That's what I do.
So I think make a pledge to be, I think make a pledge to the universe to do whatever it is that you can do to help in the evolution of the human race in a positive direction. And then start meditating.
Hey, ugh, damn it. Had to end on that. So much rather drink some goat's blood or something. You are awesome, man.
Or free-range goat's blood.
Yeah, well, of course, obviously. Gluten-free goat's
gluten-free.
Blood. All goat's blood's gluten-free. Man, you're amazing. And you got to, please, can you be the magical advisor of the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast?
Yeah, sure.
Please come back. And I want to take your courses, too. Will you tell us all again where we can take these courses? Wait, before you do that, you know who you remind me of, man? Because I used to be really into H.P. Lovecraft. You remind me of a... like one of the protagonists in those books.
That, like, I think it's early conditioning from reading those.
I'm glad that you've gotten your face out of the Necronomicon and into the other stuff, yeah, too, because I do agree with you, man. It can pull you into you will end up in a warehouse shitting yourself if you do that stuff too much. Yeah, how can we take your class?
But I'm glad everyone always thinks everyone says I look like Mark Ruffalo, so I'm glad it's H.P. Lovecraft instead of Mark Ruffalo this time. So okay, so the courses are at magic.me, magick.me, and there's four or five courses there already. There's one on chaos magic, there's one on getting peak mental and physical energy, there's one on meditation. There's a ton of stuff there, and there's going to be more and more stuff there always. You can get those and watch those anytime you want. I'm doing a live training, I think, this Saturday, on basic magic, basic Golden Dawn ceremonial magic, that will include some of the set and setting stuff for using it with psychedelics. If you go and sign up for that and use the code word Duncan, Duncan, it'll be 10% off.
Cool. That's so badass. You guys have got to do that, man. This is the real deal. This is, it finally happened. I got an actual magician on the podcast. Well, I had Wasserman, but this is like, and Wasserman's awesome. P.S. I'm not, I hope I don't, I'm scared of Wasserman. He's great. But this is great, man. And very useful stuff that you've given us. So take his class. And
all my stuff is super positive, by the way. I don't. So
yeah, I'm the one who was kept dragging you into the jellyfish land just to hear about it because it's fascinating.
It is fascinating.
But
all the courses, I should say, all the courses are focused not on theory, but on, they're all practical. It's just practical techniques for how to actually do this stuff. I don't give any actual ideologies or say what to believe. All this stuff can be combined with whatever your own belief system happens to be. It's just practical tools for changing your consciousness in a positive way.
Hare Krishna. Take the course. All the links will be in the comments section of this podcast at DuncanTrussell.com. Thank you so much, Jason.
Thank you, Duncan.
Thank you so much for listening, everybody. And don't forget to go to our sponsor, Squarespace.com. If you sign up for a membership using the code word Duncan, you'll get 10% off of their amazing web design tools. And also don't forget to dip your finger into a glass of lavender-infused honey and rub your finger along the cracked lips of your Aunt Lisa as you hold her trembling hand and blow into her ears, and then give her a nice bath and comb her hair and wrap her in linen and push her out of the back of your car into a hole and fill the hole with burrowing weasels that will devour her body and collect their excrement and use it in your garden to grow tomatoes. Talk to you soon. See you next time. Hare Krishna.